pills can be forgotten. Condoms have an 18% failure rate. You can get pregnant during your period, and research shows that 75% of 17 to 25-year-olds have had sex without the use of contraception. I'm Jess Redden, and I'm a newly qualified pharmacist. I'm passionate about young people empowering themselves with the right medical information they need to make the right decisions for their contraceptive and sexual health. In this four-part series, My Contraception and Sexual Health, supported by Bayer, I talk to four healthcare professionals to learn and to share with you what we need to know about our hormones, sexual health, and contraceptive options as young adults. Contraception hands us our sexual freedom, provided we know how our bodies work. Choose the right contraceptive option to match our needs and protect ourselves from sexually transmitted infections, which is why we created this series, and you can find further information on mycontraception.ie. The opinions shared in this podcast are those of the individual healthcare professionals and are intended as general information only. It is not intended to replace a consultation with a healthcare professional, nor is it intended to provide specific medical advice. Always speak to your doctor or nurse for personal medical advice. For many reasons, for many people, a long-acting, reversible form of contraception gives them the type of control and certainty they need. In this episode, I'm joined by Dr. Deirdre Lundy. Specialising in female health for 30 years, she has worked for all the family planning clinics in Dublin. Here she explains what long-acting reversible contraception is, what the options are. We also challenge some myths and learn some truths about using long-acting reversible contraception. Hello, and thank you for joining us. My name is Jess Redden, and I'm a newly qualified pharmacist. On today's episode, I'm so happy to be talking with the amazing Dr. Deirdre Lundy. Dr. Lundy is listed with the British Menopause Society and is an expert in menopausal care and HRT prescribing. She advises GPs throughout Ireland about all aspects of reproductive health, so we are very lucky to have her here to discuss the topic of long-acting reversible contraception. So thank you so much, Deirdre, for speaking with me today. I'd like to start off by asking you to explain the term long-acting reversible contraception.
Of course, and thanks for inviting me. I'm very happy to participate because it's an area I'm really interested in. So the term LARC is a made-up acronym. We use it in general practice just as a convenience. And the four letters stand for long-acting reversible contraception. So we would think of things like the pill and the mini pill, condoms as being short-acting products, and then things like the injectables, the implants, and all the different intrauterine devices as being longer-acting products.
Okay, and what are the main differences between short-acting and long-acting contraception?
Well, the great thing is that there's horses for courses. Like, some people love their short-acting contraceptives and are very, very happy with them, and that's fantastic. Other people find that they may neglect to remember to take their tablets from time to time, or they have had an occasion where they didn't have a condom available and maybe took a little bit of a risk and regretted it afterwards. So the advantage of long-acting contraception, the LARC products, is that they typically last anywhere from 3 months to 10 years or longer in some cases. And at any stage, you can have sex without having to think, oh my God, did I take my pill today? Or, uh-oh, did I have a condom when I left the house? And the advantage, apart from the safety of them and the reliability against pregnancy, is that they're all reversible. So if you don't like them, if you've changed your mind, if you are ready to start a family, you just have them removed.
That's great. So there is less compliance, I suppose, on the patient. And are they equally as effective as something like the pill?
Well, statistically, they're more so. So sadly, the contraceptive pill, which is one of the most common forms of contraception that people in Ireland use, couples in Ireland use, is actually one of the most unreliable. The booklets and the leaflets will all say, when used correctly, the pill is 99.9% effective. And that's true. But when used incorrectly, which is a lot of the time, unfortunately, they can let you down quite a lot. And in fact, we look at data of women who've presented to either abortion clinics or maternity hospitals who had a contraceptive failure. And we know globally that the chance of getting pregnant when you first go on the pill is 9 in 100. So 9 people out of 100 who start the pill will end up with a pregnancy within the first 12 months of use. And it's not because the pills don't work. It's because the people forget to take them. You don't see that with LARC. Once that product is in you, unless something has gone catastrophically wrong, which is very, very uncommon, you're safe. So it's really an efficacy issue.
Okay. And then there can be concerns around taking hormonal contraception and the effect that these hormones have on our bodies. Can you address this for us?
Of course. So almost all contraception contains either progestogen on its own or estrogen and progestogen. You'll never have a contraceptive that's just pure plain estrogen. So it's progestogen only or E plus P, estrogen and progestogen. And these are the cycle hormones. These, is, along with follicle stimulating hormone and luteinizing hormone, are the four hormones that control when we make eggs, when we have periods, whether we get pregnant or not. So basically what we do with the contraceptive hormones is we use a slightly stronger molecule and a slightly higher dose than you would typically have in your body, in your blood, when you're having a menstrual cycle. Some forms of contraception shut down your egg release from your ovary. They're very, very effective. And then some forms just kind of make it hard for sperm and egg to meet each other. They're also quite effective. Now, some people don't like their response to female hormones. Some people find that, well, it depends. Estrogen generally is a very mood elevating hormone, but the other one can sometimes give you a little PMS type of side effects.
Yeah, so your mood, things like that.
Yeah, so cranky, bloated, headachy, you know, anything that can happen before a period premenstrually can happen when you go on a progestogen contraceptive. Now, none of them are dangerous. You know, you're not going to die, but it's just really annoying to have some hormone change how you feel. Having said that, when it does happen, when you get a hormone contraceptive side effect, they almost always go away by themselves. It's like as if your body needs to get used to it for a little while, and then it does, and then you're happy. And very, very few women, although there are some, would come back and say, I'm done, get me off this stuff or take it out. I'm not having it anymore. But, you know, obviously you read those journeys online a lot and you think, oh, hell no, I'm not having that. But actually, those are the rare stories. And the vast majority of women are not tweeting or TikToking about their contraceptive happy times.
Exactly. And I think it's the same for a lot of medicines. You know, initially when we take them, our body's like, what is this? And we can have certain side effects. But then if you do give it that 4 to 8 weeks, you know, they subside and then happy days, you can.
Oh my God, absolutely. Now, and then I suppose some of the fear maybe, or the hesitancy around the long acting products is that, you know, if you go on the pill and you hate it, or the mini pill and you hate it, you just stop it. Whereas if you have a bar in or a coil in, or if you've gone on a 12 week injectable, you kind of have to ride it out or make an appointment for to have somebody remove the darn thing. And, you know, so there's more steps involved with a little bit of loss of control there. But so like a lot of people will do something like maybe try a hormonal tablet of some kind just to see how they respond, whether or not it suits them. And then if they generally have a good or tolerable experience with the tablet, you'd be much more confident to say, well, now why don't you think about a bar? Why don't you think about an intrauterine device? Because if anything, the long-acting bars and womb devices, you know, coil devices, actually put less chemical in your blood than any of the tablets. So even if you've had a little bit of a problem with one of the tablets, chances are you're going to feel better with an intrauterine device or an implant or a bar. The one thing I wouldn't say that would be true of is the injectable. Okay. Nothing is more potent than the progestogen that's in the 12-week injection. And once that's in you, there's no antidote. So if you didn't like the pill or the mini pill, you are not going to like the injection.
Well, it's really interesting that you say that sometimes you'll start someone on the pill. I actually haven't heard of that, but that's such a good idea because you can see whether that's going to agree with you or not.
Yeah.
I suppose in terms of cost effectiveness, are they expensive? Do they work out more or less cost effective than, say, the pill?
Yeah. So at the moment in Ireland, as you know, unless you have a medical card, you can't get contraception for free, but they're working on that. And there was a promise that by the end of 2022, that 17 to 25 year olds should have access to all forms of contraception, including LARCs. Well, we'll wait and see if it happens, but I'm optimistic, you know? So when it comes to cost, which is a big issue, and I have to say, I'm not sure that every GP is as au fait with it as they could be. You know, they're writing out prescriptions for people with limited means or other commitments and not realizing how much this stuff is going to set them back. So if you don't have a medical card and you go along with a prescription for, say, the contraceptive pill or the mini pill, you're going to be spending about, well, the doctor visit's going to cost you money, and then pills can be really inexpensive, 2-3 euros a month, or they could be 15 euros a month, depending on the brand. And like, you got to know your brands and know what's affordable. And over the course of, say, a year, 2 years, you're looking at a couple of hundred a year for a private patient, someone without a medical card. Like, that's a lot for a student or someone without a wage. Now, LARC products, and really, I should say, I'm really limiting this to the bar and the intrauterine device, because they last for years. If you like them, over the 3, 4, 5, 6, 10 years, depending on the different products, they actually work out to be much, much cheaper. So now the problem is you've got to pay for them up front. So if you go to the doctor, say, to get the bar put in, you could be charged the standard 60, 70 euros. You could be charged 100 euros. It depends on the doctor. You then got to go buy the device. The device is covered by the drugs payment scheme. So anybody with a PPS number can get that for 80 euros. You know, it's 80 at the moment, which is amazing. But now for 80 and let's say 100, for 180 euros, you have 3 years of highly reliable contraception. It's working out at less than 60 a year, which is really cheap. Relative, you know, but then you have to find the 180 in the get-go. So that's not open to everybody.
That's really interesting, because I've been out of practice now a couple of weeks. So I think it was around the 120 mark, maybe the GPS. So it's come down to 80 euro a month. So that's great.
Oh, it's getting lower all the time. Thanks be to God, you know, because people need their drugs. And, you know, contraception is not a luxury. There's some areas of the world where they, like in the United States, particularly, where people balk at the government and taxes covering contraception. Excuse me, you know, population control and reproductive autonomy is a human right, and it absolutely should be facilitated by tax money.
Totally agree with you. I suppose a common question I would get asked in the pharmacy after a woman starts on something like the coil would be, is it okay to not get a period while using LARC? Like, what would your advice be around that?
That's a really good question. So some of the most popular forms of contraception, particularly in women with children, although that's not the only group that can use them, is putting the contraception directly in the womb, like having a device inserted into the womb lining or against the womb lining where all the action takes place, rather than pumping your system full of chemicals. So you confine the chemical exposure to the lining of the womb or the area of the womb, and you leave the rest of the blood alone. So it actually makes a lot of sense. And there's two broad categories. There's ones that have copper on them as the active contraceptive element. And then there's ones that have progestogen hormone, a particularly powerful progestogen hormone known as levonorgestrel on them. Okay. So the levonorgestrel contraceptive hormones may turn off your egg release. They don't usually. If they do, about 25% of girls who get one of those hormone bearing devices inserted, if you are one of the 25%, who are becoming anovulant, as we say, you're not releasing eggs, there's a good chance you're not going to have periods at all, like from the very beginning. And even the 75% of people who continue to ovulate, they will find that in many cases, their periods get lighter, 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 and they may disappear altogether, because one of the other ways that that hormone coil works is it causes womb lining shedding, womb lining thinness. So our goal, to be perfectly honest with you, is to turn off your periods. It's not that you're building up nasty blood and you're going to end up with toxic shock or some horrendous thing. It's that the lining of the womb from which the period comes is not being developed. So there's nothing in you to bleed out of you, if you know what I'm saying. Now, the opposite would be true at a copper device. Copper devices always continue your monthly period or whatever cycle you're on. And if anything, they may get a little heavier and a little longer. So if you stop bleeding on a copper coil, get a pregnancy test.
Okay. And the copper coil, just to clarify, that's hormone free. Is that correct?
Yeah. Because a lot of people prefer not to have any chemical at all inside of their body. That's absolutely fine. They're not at all bothered about maybe a slightly heavy period, and that's absolutely fine. And maybe people don't want to go period free. Maybe people just have this kind of anxiety around, I want to see that blood every month to know that everything is A-OK.
Yeah, I do agree with you. I think there's been an increase, especially recently, of people, you know, switching to Lark, which is good to see. And I wanted to ask you, so is the insertion procedure painful?
Well, just personally, I hate the dentist. I mean, I love my dentist, but I hate going, if you know what I mean. And I can say to you that they'd almost never hurt me, but they did once. And I think part of it is a bit of a fear and an anxiety associated. So a lot of people, anything got to do with the vagina, whether it's a smear test or, you know, putting in tampons or whatever, can really sensitize them. So having an intrauterine device is not for everybody. You really do want to be up for it, as it were. The other thing is, it's not like a smear insofar as we do have to put that thing inside of your vagina that lets us see your cervix. Okay, so from that point of view, it's just like a smear. There is going to be a little bit of touching and pressure around the neck of the womb, just like a smear. Okay, but after that, there's no comparison, because we're putting this product, this little tube that has the device inside of it, right up through your cervix and into the tippy-toppy most deep part of your womb. We call it the fundus. And when you touch somebody's fundus, it can hurt. You get this kind of like a deep period pain. Now, it's brief. I'm talking 3 seconds, 4 seconds, maybe less. People without kids, people who've had a lot of vaginal deliveries. I often suggest people take their phone to the couch with them so that they can distract themselves while I'm getting on and chatting down the other end of the bed. And I've had people play solitaire while I put their coil in and they didn't miss a game, you know, whereas other people, it can be horrific and traumatic. So you really do need to, as a GP, you want to say to a patient, you know, are you up for this? Do you think this is something you're up for, you know, that you're interested in? What I would normally do is, when we're chatting about Lark, if somebody expresses an interest in a coil, I would say, well, come here to me. Let me just gently examine you. I'm doing that for two reasons. Principally to make sure that their womb feels soft and healthy and non-painful, so that there's no sign of a sexually transmitted disease or pelvic inflammatory disease, because obviously you wouldn't put a coil in then. But also to get a sense of how they tolerate having an inside examination, you know, me pushing on their womb with my hand outside and my finger in the vagina. Have a look at the cervix with the little speculum, the little plastic gizmo. Is that comfortable? Is that a deal breaker? Because there's no point in prescribing a coil for somebody who can't even tolerate a digital examination or having an examination with a speculum.
Okay, that's really interesting. So you would cover that in your consultation. So what would a typical Lark consultation involve, and how can we best prepare for that?
Well, when we train doctors, we say to them, listen, if somebody comes in and says, I want a coil, I want a bar, you should go through all the pros and cons of that device. You really want to pay special attention to the person's own past medical history and the medicines they're on, because there can be conflicts. So somebody who's already got a horrendous wicked period and has been on iron for heavy menstrual bleeding, you're not going to prescribe a copper coil. That would be crazy. You just make it worse. Someone who's had a really dangerous progestogen side effect, oh, thank God there's very few of them out there, but I suppose the biggest one would be a progestogen sensitive breast tumor. You know, you probably are not going to be prescribing a hormone based contraceptive, although sometimes we do. So you really want to make sure that the thing that the patient wants is actually okay. It may not be what you would have recommended, but if it's what she wants, well, that's absolutely fine, so long as there's no absolute contraindications. You then want to make sure that she's making that choice in context. So a lot of people say, oh, I want the bar because this, and this happened to my friend when she tried the pill or when she got the coil. So sometimes people make a choice based on false information. So you want to actually put it into context and say, absolutely, no problem. We'll set you up for this coil or this bar. But by the way, that's actually not true about the pill, or this is really what you should know before you make a decision and buy the product and come back and make the appointment. We then have to make sure, especially with things that are going to go inside, like a coil, that there's no medical problem currently. So ideally, people under 25 or someone who's just embarking on a new penetrative sexual relationship should probably get a couple of swabs done first, just to make sure that there's no silent chlamydia, silent gonorrhea knocking around before we put the device in.
Perfect. And then I wanted to ask you a few questions. I wanted to do a little quick fire round of questions just to address some common myths and misconceptions in relation to Lark. Is that okay?
Sure.
So, first one, all types of Lark affect fertility. Is that true or false?
So the bar, the 3-year hormonal implant, or a copper device that you wear in your womb, or any form of hormonal device that you wear in the womb, have absolutely no impact on your immediate return to fertility. So within a week of taking out your bar, or within an hour of taking out an intrauterine device, whether it be a copper coil or a hormone coil, your fertility is now back to 100% where it was before you had the LARC product inserted or installed.
So we would never recommend somebody try the injectable if they're thinking of starting for a family or trying for a family in the upcoming couple of months. The bar, the little implant that you can get put in, it's another progestogen, a different progestogen, which is funny because it's one of the gentler progestogens, artificial progestogens you can have access to as a contraceptive. And yet it's one of the most effective contraceptives in the world. In fact, nothing short of true abstinence is more reliable than the bar. And that includes having your tubes tied and having a vasectomy. So it's like it's an extraordinary, powerful, reliable contraceptive. And yet within about 6 days of taking it out, whatever fertility you had before you got it put in, you have it back. So that's really cool. Occasionally, and this is very small print, if somebody has an intrauterine device put in, one of the hormone coils or the copper coil, and unbeknownst to them, they actually have some or other form of infection, they can get a worsening of that infection as a result of having the foreign body in their womb, and an infection in the womb, deep infection like that, can have an effect on your future fertility, which is one of the reasons why we encourage people to get a sexual health screen before we put the device in.
Okay, thank you for that. That was really interesting. And then another one. So can you have LARC? Can you only have LARC if you've had a baby?
Well, obviously the injectable and the bar has got nothing to do with having kids because they both go under your skin. One goes in your muscle, the other one goes under your skin. So that's got no relevance to having given birth or been pregnant. It's theoretically slightly more comfortable to have foreign bodies inserted into the womb when the womb has already done some work. So if you've carried around 8 pounds baby and squeezed out 8 pounds a head through your cervix, chances are getting a tiny little intrauterine device up through that same area is going to be more comfortable. But it's certainly not a reason to avoid it. And I run a special clinic for coil insertion in the Rotunda, Holler Street, and the Coombe hospitals in Dublin. And I would say a good 50% of the ladies who attend us have never been pregnant, have never had a baby. Now, it is true to say that they may find it a little bit more uncomfortable. So our service, not all services now, but our clinics have started to develop a sort of self-taught skills around local anesthetics so as to make it as painless and as comfortable as possible, particularly for girls who've never been pregnant.
Okay, so lastly, Deirdre, true or false, LARCs cause weight gain?
Well, that's a really good question. The answer is true and false. The biggest issue around weight gain tends to affect the injectable, the 12-week injection. So because the hormone that's in that injection is very powerful and it's long lasting, it can have an effect on your metabolism. And I have seen people put on weight quite rapidly. It tends to be more of a problem with younger users and people who are already carrying a bit of extra weight. And the sad thing is it can happen really fast. And when you gain weight fast, you can get stretch marks. And although you can drop the weight, when you come off the injection, you don't lose the stretch marks. So that's a really important counseling point for people who are considering giving somebody the injectable or someone who's considering going for the injectable. You don't tend to see that with the implant, with the bar, because the doses are much, much lower and they don't affect metabolism. And you don't tend to see that obviously with the intrauterine devices because very little of that chemical leaks into the system at all.
Well, that was all of my quick fire questions. But thank you so much for speaking with me today. You are a wealth of knowledge. I could talk to you for hours about this. And I really appreciate you taking the time to chat with me today.
Absolute pleasure. Thank you for inviting me.
Thank you for listening to My Contraception and Sexual Health. We hope that this show has supported you in finding out more about your body and how to select the form of contraception that best suits you. You can find all the information relating to this episode on the mycontraception.ie website. If you think others can benefit from this series, please rate, leave a review, or share across using the social hashtag MyContraception. For further information and support, visit mycontraception.ie. This show is supported by Bayer. If you want to report a side effect or quality complaint for any contraceptive product, please contact your healthcare professional or report them to the Health Products Regulatory Authority via the Bayer.ie website.